Hello! You're listening to Career Conversations, the latest series that's part of the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters Live. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist, and together we'll meet experts in cooking, mixology, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is Mark Worley, a consumer insights controller for the Greencore Food Group. It was a role I didn't understand, but Mark was kind enough to break it down for me. He is an expert in consumer behaviour, why we buy the food and drinks we do, and what we might be buying in the future. He has worked for huge companies like Heineken and Pepsi, and has also been known to follow people around the supermarket to spy on their baskets. So watch out for him next time you're in Tesco. I'll be back at the end with some key info about how a career in food and drink insights can be really fascinating and how much you can hope to earn. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast.
If you ask my colleagues, they would say my job is to know what every individual person in the country thinks about every topic from climate change through to pasta sauce packaging. But I guess in reality, it is about making sure that everybody in our business kind of understands and appreciates that there are real human beings out there who need to see our products, they need to buy our products, and ideally they need to like them.
That is a really big remit there. I bet you're the man to have on the pub quiz, aren't you, Mark?
I'm not so sure about that.
So what does Greencore, the company you currently work for, do? How would you describe that to someone who doesn't know anything about them?
Greencore is a manufacturer of lots of different types of convenience foods. The majority of them are in retailer brands. So we supply every major retailer and a lot of sort of high street operators as well. And we make a variety of different convenience things like ready meals and soups and sauces and quiche, and also things in the food to go space like sandwiches and sushi and wraps, salads, that kind of thing.
Okay, so a lot of the brands that listeners actually just buy day to day in the supermarket or for their lunch out, that'll come from research that you've done to help Greencore manufacture foods and products?
Yeah, they're one of our old MDs used to describe them as the biggest company you've never heard of. So yeah, not many people know us, but a lot of what's in the supermarket has come from our factories.
Okay, and let's talk about how you got here to this job now. What did you study originally?
So I studied English Lit and Creative Writing. I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I just took English because I enjoyed it. And I thought that I was going to go into primary school teaching. Got to the point of actually sitting down to apply and realised I didn't want to be a primary school teacher. So just pretty much entered the big wide world and started hunting around for things. And I stumbled across a job advert for what turned out to be a company called Data Monitor, which was, they would refer to themselves quite grandly as a business intelligence company. So they would publish a lot of reports on the yogurt market or the skincare market or household paper towels, and they would have forecasts about how the market was going to grow and NPD and innovation and consumer surveys and things like that.
NPD, is that new products, new product development?
Yes, new product development and innovation, yeah.
Okay, so you're looking at this and you're not quite sure what to do with your life. What about that appealed to you? Because it sounds very analytical.
It was basically writing big reports off doing a lot of research. And I thought that was, I've spent my entire life doing that in English, reading a lot and then writing it up. So I went into it because I hoped I'd be good at it. It wasn't because of a deep-rooted love of, I didn't really know what consumer insight was before going into it. It's something that I kind of stumbled into and then realized that actually after a year or two, I had a lot of passion for it.
Is there such a thing as having a natural talent for collecting data and analysing people's behavioural traits?
I don't know if it's about talent, but I think curiosity is really important. As long as you care about people or you look at people and wonder why they do what they do, then I think that can lead you into that market research insight path. I don't think English, for example, is the natural pathway into something like consumer insight, but actually a lot of what I do is storytelling. It's trying to relate the experiences and the thoughts of real people in a business setting. And a lot of that is about trying to tell a good story. So that's a background that's helped. But, people who are interested in psychology and sociology and things like that would be very natural for that kind of position.
Well, you are someone who's become incredibly indispensable to big food and drinks brands because you're able to have a look at what consumers are spending money on and what they will be wanting. How do you go about getting that research? What do you actually do?
There's loads of different ways in which we'll get it. So, we do a lot of online surveys. Technology's improved an awful lot over the past 10, 15 years, and that gives us greater access to people. So it's much easier now to ask people questions. They can record themselves on their phone, giving you the answers to things. There's the more traditional methods like focus groups and things like that. We'll do accompanied shops with people, just spending time with people and observing people.
What's an accompanied shopping trip? Sounds like I could do with one of those.
So an accompanied shopping trip is they will do a normal shop and you sort of hover slightly threateningly over their shoulder and try and observe what they do and try and make them feel as natural as possible. You can do it in person, or there's technology now where people can wear glasses or goggles and it sort of tracks their eye movements and things like that, and that makes it feel a little bit more natural.
Yeah, it does sound slightly terrifying, you spying on me while I put lots of chocolate in my basket and then feel judged.
Exactly. I think that's why if you keep a proper distance, then you're slightly less likely to intimidate people. But you can get insight on shoppers just by hanging around in a store for a little while and just watching people shop. And you realise how almost odd everybody is when they're doing it.
Oh, so your local security guards really know you, Mark.
I have been kicked out of one or two stores, yes.
Was there a big break or a moment that helped really push your career forward?
The two times I feel like something's really changed for the better have actually come with location moves. So the first was at Data Monitor. I moved from Manchester down to London, and that just put me in the same building as some of the more senior people. And it sort of coincided, I guess, with that moment where I realized this was something that I was starting to consider a career rather than a job. And then more recently, moving to Sheffield with my now wife, which is where my current employer, Greencore, are based. And they've both come about out of, I guess, like a willingness to move, but also to try and sort of understand what's local and adapt to it.
It sounds like being in the office, networking and meeting those big players in the London office, for example, really helped to push you forward. I feel a bit sorry for young people now because there's a lot of working from home. What do you think about meeting people in real life?
It's hugely beneficial, isn't it? I agree. I feel really sorry for people starting jobs, especially virtually, because it's not so much the people that you work directly with that you miss. It's the people that you almost work indirectly with that you don't get to meet. And it sounds like a cliche, but it's the corridor conversations and things like that that you
Absolutely.
Lack. There's some really positive things to be able to said for flexible working. I think it's made the food industry grow up a little bit because there's more acceptance that people can do a good job remotely. But I don't think there's any substitute for meeting people face-to-face as well at the same time.
Hear, hear. I can't wait to go on location in all these exciting places around the world. I think a lot of people listening look at social media and think if you haven't got a big following, you're not really influential or doing well in your life. You're somebody who looks at data and analyzes things all day. Who do you think are the real influencers in this life?
That's a really good question. You know, if you'd asked me that 10, 15 years ago, people never like to admit that celebrity endorsements and things like that are important. But whether they realise it or not, that was a really significant part of, you know, how people thought about products and brands. And then we saw this sort of movement to, I sort of call it like the TripAdvisor system, where, you know, you go on Amazon, you go on TripAdvisor, and you look at what perfect strangers have scored something out of 5. There's a lot of evidence out there that people make some pretty big decisions based on, you know, how many stars out of 5 a product scores online. And that's slightly scary because there are different ways of products getting good scores, not all of them authentic.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I go on Amazon sometimes and see a 5-star product review and I think, really? that was rubbish. I bought that. It was terrible.
17,000 people have rated these drawing pins 5 out of 5. You know, like, where's that come from? But it is genuinely influential to people. That goes back to a psychological thing of sort of wanting to be part of the crowd and trusting that side of things. And I think, as you mentioned, influencers, especially for a younger generation, it is a really interesting new area. And we've seen certain recipes blow up on TikTok, for example, which is not something that I'm hugely familiar with, being in my mid-30s now, but that is a new dynamic for the industry to respond to.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? The like 5 second, 10 second recipes, and I'm a chef and I'm thinking, you're not even cooking. I'm What's the most glamorous side of the job, if there is such a thing, and what's the least glamorous side?
So the most glamorous side of the food industry is the trolls. We've been to Manhattan, been to London, been to Paris, you know, going to different restaurants and stores and things like that, and sampling products and seeing how it's done in different places.
What is a food troll then? Because when you say troll, I think of internet trolls. It's not that.
So food trolls will be, you know, we want to learn a little bit more about, for example, what Italian food is like in London, where, you know, a lot of the UK-based trends would originate. So we would go to different Italian restaurants or stores and sample loads of different parts of the menu. To sort of understand what their chefs are doing, what ingredients are being used, things like that. So that can feel incredibly glamorous when you're taxiing from restaurant to restaurant being paid to eat food.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And then the least glamorous side of the job?
I think the least glamorous side of the job might be driving home at 11 o'clock from a focus group on the other side of the country, where people have spent the last 3 hours talking about quiche in various ways, shape or form, and you've got 250 miles between you and bed.
Oh, blimey. I mean, I'm a chef and I love my food, but there are only so many things you can say about quiche, right?
Well, having done this for 6 years now, you'd be surprised.
And is it true that when you first started, one of your first jobs was to look into data on incontinence products?
That was something that I did early on as well, yeah. We had a lot of requests for that, and there was clearly a burgeoning industry. You get a lot of experience of a lot of different things when you work on the agency side of things. So yeah, I've got some strange Google search history, yeah.
So you said when you first started your studies, this absolutely wasn't the intention for your career. Why do you think this is a good career choice for graduates now?
I mean, I can talk from personal experience. I find working in insight and understanding people really fascinating. But what I love about working in the food industry is I get to interact with lots of different departments. I get to talk to commercial people, but I get to talk to chefs. I get to talk to engineers. You're constantly kind of linking these different departments and trying to sort of explain to them why people do what they do and what we think they're going to do next and how that can potentially impact on innovation and things like that. So you work with so many different types of people, and, you know, the fact that there's amazing sort of food out there on a daily basis, you know, it's really exciting to work in.
And also, I don't know if you're able to tell us about some of the big brands you've worked with or are working with, but I think you've worked with Heineken.
Yes. So again, working on the data monitor side of things, we would have some of the big brands would subscribe to the company, and that would give them access to a database of new products, to all the consumer research that we do and survey work that we do. So worked with plenty of big brands. You know, PepsiCo is a company that we worked with and did consulting on, did a big trend project with Carlsberg. So yeah, and again, it's quite exciting to work with these companies that pretty much everybody's heard of.
Amazing. So when those big brands like a Heineken or a PepsiCo comes to you, how do those first meetings begin? What do they say? We're developing a new product, or we want to improve an existing product?
Yeah, it can be anything. And it could be about we're interested in entering a new market, mm-hmm. new country, and we want to understand more about what's out there already, or are there any sort of national nuances. There's always a lot of requests on packaging and design, and what does sustainability mean to people, for example. You know, we saw a lot of questions on how that is. So it could be anything from innovation to behavior.
So that's interesting about your job. You get a real world view rather than just having your blinkers on and seeing what's around you.
Yeah, and it was fantastic in the sense that working for a business that had global brands, you know, I've got to go to different countries either to visit clients in sort of, you know, America or Thailand, but also to present at conferences. So into different countries to present at some fairly weird conferences, like World Poultry 2011 in Brussels and things like that.
World Poultry, as in chickens?
As in chickens, yeah.
Wow, that sounds like a really fun conference.
I think there was about 50 people there, but yeah.
What did they serve at lunch, dare I ask? Nando's all round, I reckon. If you were starting out again now, would you have followed the same path? What advice would you give to someone who wants to go into this now?
If I could do it again, I would probably have tried to get some experience working for like a research agency. The kinds of company that run focus groups and company shops and those kinds of studies and get that real direct face-to-face time with people. I think it builds up a lot of skills that you can then sort of use if you move to the food industry or any insight-based position, food or otherwise. I started with doing a lot of desk research, reading a lot of journals about things like that, which is interesting and useful, but less human. So, you know, I would have loved to have added a little bit more sort of proper human stuff at the beginning.
And have you ever come across any really great online learning resources for your industry or perhaps a university course that kind of hones people for this type of career?
So the Market Research Society is a really, really useful organisation. You pay a membership fee of about £150 a year, something like that. You get access to all sorts of resources. You get discounts on courses and things like that. There's so many sort of social science books that are about people's behaviour. So, for example, you know, there's a book called Why We Buy, by an author called Paco Underhill. It's quite old now, but stands the test of time. And it's all about observing people in supermarkets and different retail spaces and how to understand that. There's a fantastic book called The Choice Factory by Richard Shotton, which looks at little behavioural biases. If you go to any sort of airport bookstore and look at the top 10 nonfiction, I absolutely guarantee at least one of the things in there will be really useful for working in insight.
Are you excited by your industry? Do you feel like you're part of something that's bigger than you and useful to society?
Absolutely, because you know people are always going to need to eat. And I love the idea of progress and I like newness and I like innovation and new products and there's so much you can do in food. And the part that I work in, convenience foods, is such a huge part of the store. And, you know, we make a lot of ready meals. And, you know, if you think about the old sort of aeroplane food, TV dinner style of things to things that are a lot more fresher and visual now, and there's loads of different routes these kinds of products can go in. So I like working in something where you feel like, you know, in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, things could still look radically different.
And do you feel a sense of pride when products that you've helped to give research for end up on the shelves?
Oh, 100%. I'm there with the camera, booking friends on WhatsApp, that kind of thing, when something actually hits the shelves. Because, yeah, in a very minor way, you know, there's so many people involved in getting a product to the shelf. But, you know, that's how the system works. You can look at something and say, I was in the room there. And that, yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's me again. So that was Mark, a man with a passion for what he does and a real curiosity about what drives one person to buy a product over another. Now for the all-important information I promised you at the start. Beginning a career as a data researcher or a trainee in Insights, you're looking at about £24,000 a year. There's no degree specific to this, but qualifications in maths, science, or any subject where you can demonstrate handling statistics and numbers will help. Psychology is another extremely useful subject area. A consumer insights manager can earn £40,000 plus, heading much higher to £80,000 a year or more if you head up a team within a large company. If you're interested, have a look at the excellent food marketing graduate schemes available right now at Marks & Spencer, Mintel and Kantar with a K. Thank you again so much to Mark for speaking with me, and thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.